This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Cairo.
They tell us we got to practice social distancing and stay 6 feet away from each other, but we want to get together and have a few beers with our friends. We have found a loophole. We are the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my awesome friend and kick-ass co-host, Chris Sinzak.
Happy Saturday. I'm raising a toast to you.
As to you, man. This is great. We found a loophole, like I said. You know, we got our awesome guest this week, and he was just like, you know, it's been so long since we hung out and got drunk together that we could do that. And I could be a guest for the quarantine sessions. And I said, that's brilliant. So what you're getting on this episode is basically what the show always is anyway. A couple of dudes and maybe a friend hanging out, drinking beers, talking about rock and roll. But you guys are providing the subjects because we're answering all kinds of listener questions and thought-provoking situations that we can discuss. And it all comes from you, the Decibel Geek listener, and we appreciate it very much. So, Chris, are you excited about another quarantine session?
I kind of have to be. It's our only option these days. So, yeah, but yeah, I am.
I know. Me too. These have been a lot of fun. We've had awesome guests so far. They've been getting released left and right on Decibel Geek TV, but we're going to talk about that. Before we get to all the business, we got to do what we always do, and that is give props to the people that have taken the time to leave us those sweet, sweet, sweet podcast reviews, recommendations, whatever. We'll take it all. We've got a couple of great ones here today. And the first one is an Apple Podcast review entitled Love This Podcast. All 5 stars, just the way we love it. And it goes like this. Great music, funny guys. I love being introduced to new music and hearing music I love and being reminded of music that may have slipped my mind. Keep on rocking. That comes to us from Beach Babe in Florida via Apple Podcast. Fantastic. Thank you so much for that one. And we also got another really good one. It's a Facebook recommendation. Comes to us from Carlos Henriquez. He's been leaving us great questions leading up all these weeks in the quarantine sessions. And he also took the time to leave a Facebook recommendation that goes like this. Decibel Geek rules. The Vinnie Vincent episodes brought me in years ago, and I haven't stopped listening since. Where else can you hear talk on Tough, Ugly Kid Joe, Faith No More, Kiss, Fastway, King Cobra, Vinnie Vincent, and yes, even Hulk Hogan? Decibel Geek, that's where.
I knew you would approve of that review.
Definitely approve of that one right there. Those are great reviews and recommendations. We appreciate it very, very much. So if you guys want to take the time to leave us one of those reviews, recommendations, we like them on Apple Podcast. We like the recommendations on Facebook. And we really like the Podchaser reviews. Those are all sweet ways to help us get the word out about the show. And while I got your attention thinking about this kind of thing, here's something else cool you can do. We got a Facebook page, and it's got all kinds of cool stuff going on there all the time. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious. It's all rock and roll. You want to get in on that conversation? Here's what you do. You head on over there and you give it a like. If you already like it, here's something else you can do. There's a little section on that page where you can go to it and invite your friends. This is a fun little game. It allows you to go through your list of friends on Facebook and decide who's cool. Because if you're giving them an invite, they pass the test and are awesome people. So give it a try. It's a lot of fun. And get people to get in on what we got going on here on Decibel Geek.
Very good. And our other favorite people, the Geeks of the Week. These are people that shared on Facebook, retweeted on Twitter. Last week's Quarantine Sessions, Volume 7, with our good friend Loose Cannon, or should I say the newly minted LC from LC. Cobra and Fire. Thanks again for listening to that and sharing it. Geeks of the Week this week are Rockin' Ron Runyon, who shared it more than anybody else. Okay, and then let me get on to the rest of the list. Decibel Geevy, Aaron Martell, Aaron Baker, David Glenn, Mikhail Burrell, Jay Shablewski, Kevin Williams, Joseph Capone, Steve, Alan Desmond, J.J. Mack, Eladio, David Cathy, Ernesto Aguiar, Horny Women Love Rock. It's my favorite new Twitter handle. That's Jeffrey awesome. Mendenhall, Stephen Michael, and as always, the Mooger Fooger.
Did you mention course, that Rock and Ron Runyon shared it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, cool. And, I want to make sure.
Horny Women Love Rock is a great Twitter handle, but for some strange reason, I have a feeling it's a big burly dude out in the Midwest that's running it.
But he ain't lying.
No, well.
It's truth in advertisement.
Most of the time, yeah. All right, Aaron, why don't you introduce this week's guest?
All right, the man who has enabled this drinking session, the man who said, I'll come on Decibel Geek Podcast under one condition, you guys got to drink with me. And that man who was a genius and came up with this brilliant idea for us, which just happens to be a Saturday night in the time that we're recording this, is the one and only, the man who makes Decibel Geek TV possible, and the man who really makes the VIP program possible, the one and only, our awesome friend, Rockin' Ron Runyon. What's going on, Ron?
Uh-oh, is that my cue? is this thing on?
I got a feeling Ron started drinking a little earlier than the rest of us.
How's it going, guys?
Awesome, Ron. This is a great idea you came up with. It feels like just like it's supposed to be. Three dudes hanging out, having a few drinks, getting a buzz on, and talking about rock and roll. What do you say?
Yeah,
sounds good to me.
Yeah, three assholes doing a podcast. Where have I heard that idea before?
Hey, now.
Three assholes and 3 million bots.
Oh, yeah.
It's just us. Just three dudes drinking.
I'll bet those three assholes don't have horny women on their podcast.
Oh, this episode is so going to deliver.
Oh, I'm just getting started.
Rockin' Ron, what are you drinking tonight? Oh, no, let me guess. Jaeger bombs.
You know it.
We're all in trouble.
Oh, man. Chris, what are you drinking? Some smelly, stinky hipster IPA?
Yes, that's exactly what it's called. Smelly, stinky hipster IPA. How'd you figure that out?
That's what attracted me to it.
No, it's actually, it's called High Lie India Pale Ale from Cigar City Brewing in Tampa, Florida. All I know is it's 7.5% alcohol, so I'm enjoying it.
All right, you'll be right in line with Rock and Ron with his Jaeger bombs then.
No, not even close. I told you guys, I'm the oldest Decibel Geek here, so you were supposed to go old school. You need some Mad Dog 2020 or something like that.
You can do some shots of Wild Turkey.
I'll stick to what's safe for me. You can go on with your pickled liver. I'm all good.
I need to have you passed out before we do this Beat the Geek thing.
Oh, Ron. You know what I'm drinking tonight?
What?
This is something an old friend of mine taught me, and he called them Wisconsin Sunrise because we drink them early in the morning. It's V8 juice with beer in it, a little dash of salt in there. Sometimes you throw vegetables in it. Mine tonight are just straight. V8, dash of salt, some ice, and some cold Coors Light in it. My wife will not make out with me after I drink this stuff. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I don't think my wife's going to make out with me, and I'm sure Ron will not be able to make it to the bed by the end of that.
Well, I find them to be delicious and nutritious.
I'm glad you're being healthy, Aaron. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Awesome. And I've been drinking them for a while now.
It reminds me of, like, there's a guy I watch on YouTube who's, like, not a competitive eater, but I guess he is. He does, like... He goes to restaurants that have challenge meals where if you eat the whole thing, you get your name on the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
And he'll have like a burger that's like 6 pounds and he'll be going through like describing it. And he goes, and of course it's got lots of healthy vegetables on top of like that's going to somehow offset that you're eating 18,000 calories in a sitting.
It works for me.
Mm. Works
All
for
right.
me.
Well, we got a bunch of awesome questions. Are you guys ready to get to them?
Yeah, let's go.
No.
No.
We should
probably address this because I had to really, really talk Rock and Ron into doing Beat the Geek. He really did not want to do it.
I tried so hard to talk you guys out of this. I don't know how you became so desperate in these quarantine times to... to put me on the show. I know it's been 4 years that I've been working for you guys, and you've put out probably 200 plus episodes in that time. And it took a global pandemic for you guys to get desperate enough to put a guy on here that is not a member of a band or a podcaster.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, you're right, but also...
It takes courage to do the things we do.
Of course I am.
No, but part of this is also in recognition of the amazing amount of work you've done for the Decibel Geek name. I mean, honestly, when you took over, how many subscribers do you figure we had for the YouTube channel when you started? It wasn't much, was it?
What now?
The subscriber count on the YouTube.
I'm sorry, I was wiping the slobber off of my butthole here.
What?
What was the question again?
I forgot. I was too disturbed by
the fuck.
Oh.
I'm trying to give you a compliment, damn it. When you took over the YouTube channel, I mean, just in ballpark figure, what do you think the subscriber count was? Like 200 at the most?
I think it was just under 200.
Right. And where is it at now?
I haven't looked for a while, but I know it's, I think, coming up on 4,000.
I mean, nice. Yeah, and that's all you, man. I mean, yeah. You've done a lot. You've filmed a bunch of great live stuff. Now, even though it's gotten you kind of blacklisted from certain bands, I think it's been...
Yeah.
Can you...
That's an understatement.
I mean, you're not going to get a Christmas card from Stephen Piercy anytime soon, right?
Him and quite a few others.
Wow.
I've been threatened to be sued on pretty much a monthly basis for posting videos, but, you know, I'm getting through it. No, actually, for the most part, you know, most everybody is pretty cool with it, and they're good with me, you know, promoting the bands and the music and doing everything I can for them. But, yeah, of course, there's a select few that, you know, are not happy with it.
So when you got, like, some bands that say, man, this is great, we really appreciate you filming us, you know, and putting it on your page and helping us get the word out about what we're doing, and then there's another section of the bands that say, we don't like that. What are some of the reasons why the other bands don't want your help in getting them advertised or sharing their performances and things like that?
Well, sometimes it's the management or the record companies that don't want stuff put out, or I guess don't like that we're promoting bands and the music, and that's their job. And they don't like us stepping on their toes, I guess, that we're putting out things and promoting them, and that's what they pay their record companies and stuff to do. But the most part, the bands themselves, they like all the promotion they can get, and, you know, like their music and their word out, you know, word of mouth, and that they want it out there. But it's the big shots behind the scenes that usually give me the most problems.
Right, I can imagine, because then somebody, a artist sees your video on Decibel Geek TV and says, this is awesome, this is professionally filmed, you know. What do you do, you know? Why aren't you producing things like this for me, you know, when I'm paying you to do this? And they don't want to hear that shit, so I don't know. It just sucks because it's double-purposed, where they could be using you, Rock and Ron, to help them, and you're more than happy to do it.
Well, I think what they mostly don't understand is the YouTube channel is not monetized at all. We've never made a single penny off of anything that's been posted. And it's, you know, everything that when it is posted, the copyright is claimed to whoever the owner is of the music or the images or any of that. And we don't make any money off of it, but it seems to me like the record companies and managers or whoever thinks that somehow we're making money off of their artists or their music, and that's not the case.
Gotcha.
From the beginning, I've gone into this as doing it for the love of the music and to get the word out on the bands that we love and the music we love, and to let people know, and to see the videos and see the shows, because, I'm just promoting the music out there and giving a taste of what the show is like, because I'm promoting for you to go see these bands when they come to your town.
Right.
And that, because this is what you're going to see. That's what I'm putting out there.
Ron, you've been doing this for a long time. You're putting together Decibel Geek TV, and you've seen so many bands and have gotten so much footage. Do you have like a prize video of everything you've done? Like one video out of all of it that is your favorite?
Oh my God. Well, the video episodes that I do of the Decibel Geek podcast is what I'm most proud of, because that's what I spend the most time on creating and, making the visuals entertaining and that. So I can't really pick out a performance per se of, but there's actually so many of them and so many experiences I've had over the years that have been just great with filming shows, all over the world, with going to festivals like Sweden, which is the first time I've actually ever even been out of the country.
That's awesome.
And I went to Sweden twice, and those were, Sweden Rock was awesome, was the best festivals I've ever gone to. And, of course, a few Rocklahomas, and, of course, the Monsters of Rock cruises. Those are always great because you mingle with the band members and stuff on the ship. That's always great for, making those connections. And it's always great to me that I'll go up to a rock star, so to speak, and be talking to them. And when I introduce myself and say, I'm with Decibel Geek TV, when they come back and say, "Oh yeah, I know Decibel Geek TV. I love that. I love your videos."
Nice.
That's a great feeling that you can do that. And even when I went over to Sweden, I had people tracking me down, that then would come up to me and see me wearing the Decibel Geek TV shirt.
Are you really rocking, Ron?
Yeah, and they would. Well, they would say, do you do the Decibel Geek TV videos? And I would say, yeah. And they'd say, oh, I love those videos. Those are great. And you're all the way over here in Sweden.
Right.
And you're seeing these videos. And that's always makes me feel good. And that's what I do it for.
Very cool. Well, I will say my favorite performance that you've captured, at least recently, is the Striper from Monsters of Rock Cruise. Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean,
you really caught them on a good night, because they really kicked ass in those videos.
Yeah, those were good.
All right.
And Ron, you've been releasing all the quarantine sessions, too.
Yes, I started doing that because, we're in some crazy times here, so I'm... of course, you guys had to change your format and how you're doing things. And I kind of had to go along with it. And we're not having any live shows right now. We're not having anything going on. So I haven't been able to put up any new content for quite a while. And so, I wanted to start putting up some content. And it's... good to put up the quarantine sessions here.
I see how it is.
Open it up to a wider audience of people that may not be able to download the audio podcast or rather see it on YouTube.
I see how it is, Ron. It takes a national tragedy, a worldwide tragedy, to shut down the world of music before you start just, I think I'm going to go ahead and just release a bunch of Decibel Geek episodes.
Yeah, and I'm going to continue to do that every week and put up the new episodes of Decibel Geek. But, of course, as soon as all this craziness is over with, then I'm going to get back to going to live shows as soon as we're able to and start putting up some performance videos again.
I can't wait.
I'm sure there's a lot of bands out there that are itching to get back up on the stage and do their thing, and I want to be there to record it.
Shoot, yeah, man. And we're happy that you're out there representing Decibel Geek. And like I mentioned earlier, something else you might not know is Rock and Ron's got a huge hand in the Decibel Geek VIPs. And if you don't know about that, it's on Patreon.com. You can become a Decibel Geek VIP. And we've got hundreds of, well, not hundreds. I think we've got 106 episodes of the Chris and Aaron Show and a whole bunch of other stuff in there archived for you. So if you become a VIP, you get all that stuff. And I was telling you guys before we recorded that I've actually got outtakes of every single quarantine session that we've done so far, and I'm going to make them all into a big super episode. We got some gold before we started even recording today for that.
Yeah. It's going to be a while.
I apologize to all the listeners beforehand here of any trash talk that I did before this.
Oh, my God.
I know there was a lot of trash talk on private messenger between you guys with me and
no shit. Like, I mean, all like every other quarantine session, like anybody we've brought on, other podcasters that we've had as guests, it's like, okay, you know, Sunday at 1 o'clock, okay, I'll be there. We don't hear a thing from them until it happens, but not with Rock and Ron, because with Rock and Ron, it's like, I don't know if I could do this. I'm going to be your worst guest ever. I'm not going to get any answers right on Beat to Geek. And then it goes from that to, I demand $10,000 and, you know, no brown M&Ms. And I'm like, who the hell are you? Like, are you Vinnie Vincent or something?
Yes, Vinnie Vincent is my contract negotiator. I've gotten all my advice from him.
Wow.
And
there's your first.
And it's worked out good because I did make you guys put my name in the Geeks of the Week this week, so that I could get an extra $10,000 for the use of my name.
Such a diva.
Well, you're awesome. You're not dealing with the normal podcasters that you usually deal with now.
That's right.
No kidding.
Ron's a raw, untapped talent.
Oh,
as
man.
We're gonna find out all right today.
This is only the second podcast I've ever been on, and so I'm a rare commodity. So you guys need to pay up for me to be on here.
The rare being the key word, right?
Yeah. We've been saving up for 9 years, and here you are.
Yeah. All right, we ready to get to some questions?
Yeah, let's do that.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
All right, so the first one comes to us from Instagram, and it's...
Welcome to the Dumb and Dumber episode of Decibel Geek Podcast.
It's a dumb, dumber, and dumbest.
This well, is this by the is end, we'll make know the in Tiger order. King look like intellectual entertainment here.
Well, let's see. Let's
go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask your questions.
Who are you?
All right. All right.
I don't even know that right now. Let me fill up another mug of Jaeger and Red Bull here and see what I can come up with.
Okay.
All right. Well, ask away.
All right. Here's the first one. Don Hoxie wants to know, if it came to pass, would you guys be cool with Axel DC or an Axel DC album and a tour? Or do you think it's sacrilege? What if they change the name of the band?
I'd be cool with it as long as they call it Axel DC. I don't think I'd be happy with them calling it AC/DC, but either way, I would definitely want to hear it. And I was hoping they were going to do that, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I know that was something we were both looking forward to. I mean, when it happened where Axel had to come in and do some of those live shows, and it sounded damn good, you know. And I thought at the time, how great would it be to have Axl Rose singing AC/DC-style songs on a new album? And they talked about it was something they were doing. You know, they were writing songs together. I was really, really looking forward to seeing what that was going to be. But, yeah, just like you, don't call it AC/DC.
Yeah.
Rock and Ron, would you got into that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was mixing up my drink. What was the question?
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know on that. I'm okay with Axel filling in and doing, you know, he did a good job of filling in for Brian and doing that. And I don't know what the real story is, what's going on, but I actually really hope that Brian Johnson is back in the band and is able to not only record a new album, but go out on tour and that, because, you know, I came into AC/DC on the Back in Black, and then I went backwards.
Yeah,
from there, you know, but the first album I seen of them when I was working in a record store at a very young age, you know, that was the first album I seen of theirs. And, you know, I thought that was a perfect album and I loved it. And then from there, that was actually the second concert I ever seen in my life, was the Back in Black tour.
Nice.
And I went backwards from there into the Bon Scott era. My growing up, I knew the Brian Johnson era. I love AC/DC, and that's what I want to see is them continue on with Brian Johnson. So, you know, nothing really against Axl Rose, but he needs to stick with Guns N' Roses, and he was a great fill-in, but keep it at that, and I hope they can continue with Brian.
I can respect that. That's a good answer.
Well, good. I'm one for one now.
All right, let's see where it goes with number two. This one comes to us from DNoonan5150 on the Instagram. Wants to know your favorite rock metal concept album, and why is it Operation Mindcrime?
Well, I would say it is Operation Mindcrime for me. I, to this day, I think it's the best concept album ever written. I think it's every song on that album is good. It's got a great storyline through it. And, I mean, Jeff Tate wouldn't be touring on it 30 years later if it didn't have something to it. And, like, that album means so much to Queensryche fans. I'm not really a big fan of concept albums overall, but Operation Mindcrime is one where I think they got it right. I love that record.
Ron, what do you think? You a fan of that
one? I have to agree with Chris for the most part that, yeah, I do love the Operation Mindcrime. It's a great album. I'm also not too big on concept albums and that, but I'm actually much, much older than you guys. So when I think concept album, I actually think Pink Floyd The Wall is what I look at as a concept album. I don't know if a lot of people consider that rock or certainly not heavy metal, but
it's pretty heavy in spots,
but as far as a total concept album, that's what I really think of. Besides,
because it had the whole movie and everything that went with it.
But we're not going to go there.
No, we're not.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to go with Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare. I think that's my favorite concept album.
That's a great one, too.
I didn't even think of that one.
But I mean, you can't go wrong with the wall because that had the whole movie that went along with it and everything.
That's true.
Did Operation Mindfrog ever have any kind of movie or anything to do with it?
Alice Cooper had, you know, I had it on VHS, which was great. We watched it probably a million times. Was the TV special for Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare, which, you know, I loved that. So, you know, with Vincent Price and the whole thing. So, yeah, I take it back.
All right, awesome. I forgot about
Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare. Yeah, that's also an excellent concept album.
What about Music from the Elder?
No. I said we're not going to go there.
Thought I'd give you one more shot at it. All right, let's move on to Twitter. We got one from Twitter. It comes to us from our friend Eladio. He says, a few weeks ago, Aaron mentioned he was listening to a lot of Extreme. I know he's not a big Queen fan, but have you ever seen their set at the 1992 Freddie Mercury tribute at Wembley? If so, what are your thoughts? I've not seen it. Are we talking about Queen?
Well, they did after Freddie died the next year, they did a Freddie Mercury tribute concert where basically Roger Taylor and Brian May and John Deacon were the backing band for a whole lot of special guests doing Queen songs.
Okay.
And Extreme did a set. And I think Tie Your Mother Down was the one I remember the most of them doing. Right. If you haven't seen it, you really should check it out because they were great on it.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out because that's one of them Queen songs that you can really rock out. I've heard other bands do covers of that song, and it's always really good.
Yeah, that whole concert's really great. I mean, I know you're not the biggest Queen fan, but the performances are – and, like, Metallica comes out and does Stone Cold Crazy with Brian May and Tony Iommi. That's a pretty great performance, too.
Right on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I know I did see that back in the day, and it was great. I can't remember much of it now, but I do remember, I think it was Def Leppard or at least Joe Elliott that came out, did a good performance. The whole concert was good from what I remember of it, but I don't remember specifically who came out and did what. But yeah, I need to revisit that one because I am a huge Queen fan. I love them, and I would love to go back and check that one out again.
Yeah, I'll have to do that too. I've never seen it. Sounds awesome.
I don't remember Extreme on that, so I would have to see that again. But they are good, and Gary Cherone is an awesome front man, and of course Nuno. And yeah, I need to revisit that one and see it again.
Yeah, Cherone's awesome, as long as he's not singing for Van Halen.
On record, but live, he was actually pretty entertaining.
All right, so let's move on to the Facebook questions, because that's where the questions are aplenty. We'll start
that's
out with this one.
That's where the good ones are.
That's right. We'll start out with this one from Luke McGill. Hey, guys, really enjoying the quarantine sessions. It's been a terrific source of knowledge and humor on my favorite style of music. There have been some great major label albums that were released post the grunge rock explosion in the early 90s. What's the best major label release that missed the boat, which could have been a hit if released before 91?
Oh, anyone that knows me knows what I'm going to say right now.
You know what? I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to have a hard time disagreeing with it. Ron, go ahead. What's the word?
My top post-grunge, we'll say, as Luke says, that if it would have come out a couple years earlier, I think would have been huge, is, of course, Wildside's Under the Influence. I think was an awesome album, and I love those guys, and I think that would have been huge if it would have come out a couple years earlier. And add-on, I think, is the band Thunder with Backstreet Symphony was another one that I bought around the same time. And I also love that album, you know, with the grunge era and the changing of the times in our musical climate in the early 90s. A lot of these bands just put out one and then disappeared. But yet, you know, especially for Thunder and another band I love, the Choir Boys, yeah, which was the London Choir Boys when they came out in the early 90s, put out great albums and then just disappeared. But yet, you know, when I discovered on the internet, you know, later on, they're still huge overseas and have been putting out albums all these years and headlining festivals and that, and are still huge over there. And yet we hear nothing about them in America. And, you know, but I would say first and foremost is Wild Side would be my top album that I think didn't get its due. And unfortunately, they broke up shortly after that because of the grunge era. And then honorable mentions is Thunder and the Choir Boys.
I knew you'd go with the Wild Side, man. Like I said, that is a hard one to disagree with because there was even at the time, the record labels were fighting over that band. And it should have been huge. You know, the album was great. I mean, and there's so many of them. I mean, I've got my go-tos would be like Tough. Obviously, Enough's Enough, you know, got lumped in with something that they shouldn't have been put in with. And could have been, should have been so much bigger than what they were. There's, I don't know, man. There's so many of them. Wild Side, Enough's Enough, Tough. I mean, War Babies. You go on down the line.
Yeah, I listened to that War Babies again the other day after you, because you got me into that song. Was it Hook Me Up or Hang Me Up?
That was Starsky.
Yeah. So, like, that song was written with Paul Stanley, but that whole record is really good. But the one I've actually been rocking a lot this past week, and I posted about it today, is the Second Coming album by Shotgun Messiah. Came out in 1991.
Oh, yes. I love that album so much.
It's just, so do I.
There's so many good songs. And, like, the thing that drives me that is crazy is, like, this came out on Relativity Records, and it's like it sounds better produced than almost every other rock band coming out at the time. Yep. You listen to it now, the production is, like, pristine on this thing. And Harry Cody never really comes up and talk about great guitar players, but his playing on this album is amazing. And, like, a lot of times I don't like the single choice that they make for bands, but that, you know, Heartbreak Boulevard is in far and away the best song on this record, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's catchy as hell, and I think that is a perfect album. There's not a bad song on it. You can listen to it all the way through and rock it out all the way till the end. And back in the day, that was one of my favorite albums, but nobody else ever knew about them. None of my friends ever talked about Shotgun Messiah. It was me and one dude I knew, because we were weird, and we were kind of decibel geeks before there was such a thing. And we knew about Shotgun Messiah and loved it. And I know some people, it's weird because to even say Shotgun Messiah and say some people think this and some people think that, but it's such a niche thing. But some people actually prefer the next album that they come out with after that one, which was Violent New Breed, and they became kind of like a Nine Inch Nails kind of a band. But I was totally shocked when that album came out because I love this one so much, and that album is a completely different band, and it's just a couple of years after this one came out.
Yeah, but it's funny. They're like one of the few bands that could make the switch from, you know, the hard rock of the late 80s, early 90s into the industrial thing. Most bands come off sounding like a parody when they try to do that, but I thought Violent New Breed was a great record too. I like them both.
I mean, for what it was great, but I mean, a lot of good it did them.
Yeah, no, it didn't help.
It wouldn't have mattered if they'd have stayed the same or changed. It just wasn't happening for Shotgun Messiah, which is a shame because, I mean, Tim Skold is a freaking genius. And he went on to play with Marilyn Manson and has got a ton of solo albums and has done electronica music. And, yeah, he's a far out dude. I would love that. That's put that at the top of my bucket list. I'd love to have Tim Scold on Decibel Geek sometime, doing an Albums Unleashed on that one.
That would be great.
Hell yeah.
All right.
All right, the next question comes from Mark Carson, and he says, I'm interested to know what you think of the band Paw, and in particular their first album, Dragline, and the song Jesse. Did you guys, this is a question that came in early, did you guys get a chance to check this out?
Jesse is the best song about a boy and his dog since Me and You and a Dog Named Boo.
I don't know, that song Shannon is pretty good from the 70s. You remember that one?
No.
It was like a power ballad about a guy that had his dog die. I remember advertising for this band and I think this record in the 90s, like Metal Edge, and I don't think I ever really gave it a shot, and I gave it a shot this week and I wish I hadn't. I love that you listen to the show, Mark, and I hope that you'll continue to listen to it, so forgive me in advance, but I thought this was terrible. I listened to the whole record and it sounded like, I don't know, it sounded like Glenn Danzig trying to do a Seven Mary Three record. It just sounded so awful to me. I didn't like it.
Wow. Now, yeah. I only checked out the one song that was suggested, the song Jesse, and I liked it. I thought it was pretty good, and it makes me want to check out the rest of the album, but I didn't get a chance. But, man, that's harsh.
Well, if you continue listening to the show, you'll like Aaron a lot more than me, apparently.
I don't know. I dug it. I thought it was pretty cool. I'm going to check out more of that band. What a weird name, Paw, P-A-W.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why – that's one of them things, just like Luce was telling us last week. Or should I say LC? LC was telling us last week about Perfectly Rated.
Yeah.
Does Paw fit into that? Does that hurt them and make them not big? You say they ain't no good, so maybe that's got something to do with it.
I listened to every single song and I gave it a real shot and I was just like, oh, this is terrible. I can't listen to it. It's just not for me.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
Paw was too hard on me. I thought Ma was much nicer to me.
Oh boy. Ron's busting out dad jokes.
No, actually, seriously, I did go and check out Pa when he asked this question, and they were all right, but it was obviously from the very beginning a grunge band, which I don't have a whole lot of love for because I am a child of the 70s and 80s and really resented grunge coming in and changing my whole musical atmosphere. But, that being said, it wasn't bad. I thought the Jesse song was okay, but yeah, I did think it was pretty funny that it was all about a guy and his dog and not wanting the dog to follow him or something like that. But I did actually check out a couple other things, and I think there was a song now I can't remember, but couldn't something. And actually, I thought that was a pretty good song, but I don't know what album it was off of, if it was off of the same album or a different album. But that was a pretty decent song. And, they were all right, but that's what I say. It was obviously they were going for that grunge sound of the early 90s and it didn't really click with me. But, I'm not going to be as harsh as Chris is on it. that I thought it was all right.
All right, cool. Well, listeners, all check right. It out yourself. It's a band called Paw, like I said, P-A-W, song called Jesse. Check it out. Let us know in the show notes what you thought of it.
Yeah, interesting that a band named Paw, P-A-W, and their hit song is about a dog. that was pretty ironic, but
that's okay. Why they never made it big. All their songs are about dogs. All right, let's get back into Rock and Ron's lane. Matt Barclay's got a question. He says he wants to know, is Skid Row without Bach just a Skid Row cover band?
Oh, here we go. Am I taking this one?
Go ahead.
You go first.
Well, this is the age-old question that keeps coming up of when is it considered a cover band? And unfortunately, pretty much every band nowadays would be considered a cover band because they don't have original members in it anymore. But as far as Skid Row goes, you know, I've seen them a few times in concert, and they do good, and there's still some original members in there. I'm way too far into the Jaeger Bombs now to remember who they are, but I know there's some original members in Skid Row.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Snake Sabo and Rachel Bolan.
Yeah, Scotty, that's who Hill. I was thinking of. But in all seriousness, it's still not, you know, with any band, it's not the same, especially with a lead singer. If the lead singer is
not in
the band anymore, it's hard to still think of them the same way as what they were in their heyday and that. But as far as calling them a cover band, I don't know what constitutes a cover band. And I think if you have at least a few of the original members or two or three, it's still the band, and they have the right to call themselves, you know, the name of the band. But then again, you know, when you have bands like, say, Quiet Riot or something that only have, or Foreigner, that have one original member, and, they do shows that even they don't even have one original member or something in it, that's definitely a cover band. You know, I don't know if I would consider Skid Row a cover band, but it's definitely not the same without Bach.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with you there. It's not the same without Bach because, I mean, it's especially hard for a band like Skid Row because Sebastian Bach was such a huge presence in that band. And with him gone, it obviously is never going to sound the same because nobody will ever sound exactly the same as Sebastian Bach. They've gotten other guys who are awesome singers that can sing just as good as Bach, but it's never going to sound like Sebastian, not perfectly. But I think the thing that keeps Skid Row from not being a cover band is because, one, you've got all the principal songwriters in the band. You got Snake Sabo, you got Rachel Bolan, you got Scotty Hill. That's Skid Row, really. If you want to break it down mathematically, that's totally a band right there. They did stuff with Johnny Solinger on vocals for years. And if you're a fan of hard rock and metal kind of music like we are, if you dug Skid Row back in the day, if you can listen to those albums, what are they called? Revolutions Per Minute and Thick Skin, I think what the other one was called, which Michael Wagner, I know, produced at least one of them. It had to have been Thick Skin. Thick Skin especially, and a lot of the songs on Revolutions are really, really good. Is it Skid Row that you remember from back in the day? No, because it doesn't have Smash Box singing it. Is it a band that's just as good as Skid Row with a different singer? Damn right. You know, those albums are fucking awesome, and nobody ever gives them their due. And so they did their thing with Solinger for a while. They've got, what, ZP Thert is the singer now?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an amazing singer. I'm looking forward. I've got all the Skid Row albums that have come out since Sebastian Bach has left or fired or whatever. And I like it all. I like it all a lot. But it's never going to be classic Skid Row. It's always going to be Skid Row with new, different, awesome singers.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much said everything I would have said. So, I mean, I would not call them a cover band because, I mean, Snake and Rachel are still the primary songwriters, and they hold the ownership of the name. So, I mean, technically, it's still Skid Row. But, yeah, I mean, we all kind of long for the days of Sebastian Bach being in the band. But, you know, they've made enough money to where they don't have to work with the guy. So, you know, my hat's off to them, and they keep marching forward.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that sets them apart is they don't just rely on the back catalog. They continue to create and produce new music as they go. That's the difference.
Yep. All right, let's go to the next one.
All right, we got a question from Bill Elam, our good friend. He wants to know, Rockin' Ron Runyon, what kind of recording gear are you using for the Decibel Geek TV videos, and anything that you don't recommend?
I hate to give away my secrets here, but I have a little point-and-shoot camera that does pretty good HD video on it, and I also have a Zoom H5N audio recorder that I do separately, and I sync up the audio with the video to make the audio better. Getting close to the speakers and that has blown out the microphone in my camera, but over the years I've tried to do the best audio and video that I can on the performances.
See, because that's the secret to it, right? Because, I mean, you're not just filming like a football game or a wrestling match or something. You're recording live performances, so the sound quality has to match up to the video quality.
You know, ultimately, I love to be in the controlled situations of a venue where I can set up the audio recorder in the back where, you know, it doesn't get a lot of background noise, and, you know, the audio is better, but I can do the video more up close and, you know, but still be behind the majority of people so that I don't block them from their view, because I agree with a lot of people that I do hate that, you know, people put up their cell phones and that nowadays and do a lot of recording, and it interferes with the performance. So I do try to stay back in the background and get my videos. But as far as what I don't recommend is that I did get a professional camera to try to be more professional. I got a Nikon camera that, you know, I thought would be more professional and that, but as it turned out, the video was not as great. It probably takes great pictures, but it was not as good on video, and it was big and bunglesome and heavy. So I've always resorted back to just my little mobile point and shoot camera to take my video, to get the best video possible.
Well, I think that's the other side of that too, is because, you know, people talk about it sucks when you're at a show and people are holding up their cell phones, but think about that on the other side, you know, where Ron is taking the time to make sure he gets quality audio along with the video. Somebody with their camera might be right there and catching a bunch of cool shots, but you're never going to get the quality audio of somebody that's really doing it right, like Rockin' Ron is.
You know, I try to do the best I can.
Ron, you do an awesome job for us on Decibel Geek, and we really appreciate everything you've done for Decibel Geek TV.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. We have another question from Aaron Baker that is also kind of directed to
Aaron. I love Aaron.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah, his thing is, it's not really a question, but he just wants to thank you, Ron, for your advice on getting to talk to Drew Rose of Wildside and not Benny Rindance.
Yeah, that short story, but, you know, Aaron is a great kid, and I can say kid because he's actually younger than my kids.
Yeah.
That this was a few years ago, but he was just starting up his podcast, the Bakery Podcast, and he had messaged me that Benny Rindance had messaged him and was wanting to get together and do an interview and that. And actually, that was my first forte into band drama, which was, there was some animosity between the band members of Wildside and Benny, and I don't know what the whole story is and that, but I had just told him that Benny is not really the one to talk to, that he should get in touch with Drew. Drew's always been super nice to me over the years, from the first time that I saw Wildside reunite, and is a super nice guy. And I told him that if he got in contact with Drew, that I'm sure that he would give him an interview, and, you know, it would work out great. And he did the interview with Drew, and it came out good, and he was very thankful for that. And, props to Aaron, and yeah, I was happy to be able to help him out with that and to get him the interview with Drew.
That's super cool, man. Yeah, Aaron Baker's awesome. He was a former guest on the show and a great contributor to these quarantine sessions questions. And he's got another one. I think this is probably best for Chris. What's the best approach when asking an artist to come on the show?
Well, I mean, really for us, it's been talk to them directly. We have had some good relationships with publicists and PR people. But a lot of the time, I typically Facebook. I mean, it's kind of the thing where we do sometimes on Twitter, but try to just have a dialogue with the artist directly, and maybe mention something you like, or kind of try to break the ice with something without just straight up asking them to come on the show.
Right, kind of let them know that you know your shit. Give them a compliment on something about theirs, that something that they created that you actually do like, so you come across somebody that's in the know.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually what I would do. I would just, say, hey, I liked X amount, X album or X song. And then usually that opens them up to saying yes to coming on. As long as you come from a kind of a heartfelt place, it works. The funniest, and actually somebody brought this up to me the other day, we really should use Twitter more often, because, like, one of the more out-of-the-box guests we had was Alexi Lawless, the soccer player.
Right.
Who... he had liked something that we had on Twitter, and I saw that he did it, and I remembered him from the 90s, because he was like, MTV covered him a lot, because he had kind of a grunge look. He had the long red hair.
Yeah, he was the rock and roll soccer player.
Yeah, and I was like, I remember this guy from when I was in high school, and I just direct messaged him. I'm like, you like the show? And he's like, oh, yeah, I listen every week. And I'm like, really? And he's like, oh, yeah. I was like, I'd love to have you on. He's like, well, I'm a massive Rat fan. And I'm like, well, shit, come on and talk about the Rat catalog. Yeah. And next thing you know, we had a great episode. And
that was a trip, how that all worked out.
Yeah, it was great. And then I actually got to meet him in person. I helped get him into NAMM when I went to NAMM in California, and we got to hang out for an afternoon. And
that's awesome.
Super, super nice guy. But yeah, just remember that these people are people. They're not, alien beings or whatever. Of course, Vinnie Vincent might be a different story, but, just remember that they're people, and, come to them with your appreciation for what they do. And, usually most of the time it works out.
I agree.
And I agree as well. I don't have a podcast show to to put people on, but I agree wholeheartedly with Chris. If I deal with the artists themselves, the majority of the time, as I said before, they're completely open to filming the shows and doing promo stuff and that, and they're, you know, they're for the most part great to work with. It's the management and that that always seem to cause the problems. But the, you know, if you treat them like Chris said, as just people and not, you know, I try not to fanboy out on meeting people and just treat them as I would any other person. It seems to always work out good, and they love to do anything they can to get their name out there.
Right on. Awesome question. All right, here's one from Andrew Jacobs, another awesome contributor to the quarantine sessions, and this is another question for Ron. He wants to know, when did you discover Decibel Geek? Do you remember the specific episode, and how did you come to run their YouTube channel?
Since Chris already warned me to quit rambling on, I'm going to try to make this as short as possible.
Oh, no, this is the one we want you to really embellish on, though.
But, you know, I can't remember a specific episode because it was certainly the timeline would have been late 2015 that I was working nights at the time. As some people may know, I am a truck driver during the day, and I was working a night shift at this time, and I was looking for something new other than just music to entertain me and keep me awake at night. So I started looking into podcasts and, you know, had downloaded many different podcasts and had looked up like what I was interested in. And one thing, of course, I put in was Kiss. And when I put in Kiss, of course, I got quite a few podcasts that were solely, you know, devoted to Kiss.
No.
Which I didn't want to, you know, just listen to podcasts only talking about Kiss. Even though I love them, you know, I can only take so much of just talking about Kiss.
Not only, just mostly.
I did, you know, like four or five episodes of each podcast, and I would listen to them. And, you know, Decibel Geek struck a chord with me to where they were not only talking about Kiss, but was talking about, you know, all the other bands I love and the music of the 80s and that I loved. So it struck a chord with me, and that was one of my favorites. And I kind of, at the same time, I do remember that I think it was the Viking episode.
Viking rock.
Which would have been around the end of 2015 when you guys actually read my iTunes review, which was way longer than it should have been, which goes back to Chris talking about me rambling.
Yeah, there's a theme here.
Yeah.
No, go on.
Anyways, that they actually read my iTunes review on the Viking episode, which I thought was really cool. And at the same time, or right around the same time, you guys started up the Patreon VIP program. And I may be wrong, but I was the first, or at least one of the first, that signed up for VIP, and which, by the way, I still pay $20 a month for, even though I provide all the content for it, but that's another story. And anyways,
we owe you money.
Yes.
I still support you guys regardless. So I had started on the VIP and just for the fun of it, I had done a couple of videos, which was really cheesy and amateur because that's what I had at the time. There was funny videos of Chris and Aaron and just making fun of them. I think it was there was a Star Wars video where I did headshots of them on Star Wars characters and stuff like that, which was, it was really stupid and cheesy. But anyways, then when I was doing that, Chris had messaged me and said, would you be interested in running the YouTube channel? And I knew nothing whatsoever about YouTube. Is that Chris cutting me off again?
And yes, your timer is up.
My time is up. But anyways, so he asked me if I wanted to run the YouTube channel, and I said sure. I had a vision in my head of wanting to create video episodes and do visual stuff, especially to the year in review.
Yeah.
Episodes that I wanted to add the visuals to, and so that's what I started out with, and that's what I started doing, and it just went from there. I love the experiences that I've had with Decibel Geek, and it pretty much changed my life.
Yeah, it
so
might be a little.
I thank you guys for that.
Man, Ron, awesome. That is so cool. And I got to say, out of all the things that we've done over the years, I think some of our most well-received themes were the year-in-review episodes that Chris and I have done. And, you know, it might be a little selfish of me to say this, but my favorite episodes of things, my favorite things that go up on Decibel Geek TV are the episodes that you do when you take the year-in-review episodes and add so much to it. And it becomes like a TV show, like a real snapshot in time. So it's not just us narrating it, but it's so much more than that. And that's awesome. So if you guys have never seen one of Rock and Ron's year-in-review episodes on Decibel Geek TV, you got to check that out. It's super cool.
Yeah, I love those. And all the stuff you've done for the episodes, it definitely like takes it on to a whole different kind of dimension, because I actually get to enjoy the episode all over again with visual stuff. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. Moving on to the next question.
All right, here's one from the Podfather. The Podfather. Uh-oh. The one and only Ken Mills. I guess this
all
one must
hail
be
Ken Mills.
This one must be directed at Ron too, because he wants to know, how expensive is it to maintain your stunning good looks?
Oh, that's definitely to me.
And humble too. That's part one of a two-part question. Part two is, are you surprised at how big this whole thing is, how far the reach of it all is?
So part one was, how expensive is it to maintain my stunning good looks?
Uh-huh.
I will tell you that it is quite expensive because, you know, for 20-plus years now, I've had to buy razor blades, which are quite expensive for my bald shaved head. But since this COVID thing, I now actually have a full head of hair, and it's gray, but it's a full head of hair. So yes, it's expensive, and it's so expensive that I've gotten too lazy to shave it. And part two, as far as how big it is and how far reaching.
That's not what he meant, Ron. That's not what he meant.
You know, people told me that it was above average when I was born. So it was a natural growth, and you know, I'm pretty proud of that. And you know, yes, I am amazed at how far reaching it is.
All right, Ron, you were right. We are going to regret having you on the show.
Oh man.
I think the first question is more directed at Ron's wife, Dawn, than him. What would she say?
Oh, is that not what he was talking about? What were you talking about?
Well, I was like, what would Dawn say is how you maintain your stunning good looks?
No, she would talk more about how big it is.
Oh, God.
Don't do that shit when I'm in mid-drink, damn it.
I know. I spit all over my keyboards.
Ken Mills, I hate you for asking that question.
I love you for asking it. You. You are the pod father. All hail. Love you, Ken.
Oh, man. All right. Moving on. Tim Bream, our good friend, he wants to know, I know he's a huge Lizzie Borden fan, he wants to know Lizzie Borden's Midnight Things, yay or nay?
Oh, big yay. I love that record. I know Aaron didn't like it as much as me, but I love that record.
Yeah, I'm going to go yeah, I guess. I mean, man, all those years of waiting for a new Lizzie Borden album and being a fan of what the Lizzie Borden was that I remembered, I was hugely let down by that album, you know, and I don't hate it. It's not terrible. It's just not the Lizzie Borden that I knew and what I was expecting and really what I was hoping for. It's not bad. I haven't really gone back to it since I got it, but I was so excited to get it. But once I got it, yeah, it just kind of sits on the shelf now.
Well, I don't know about that album specifically, but I can tell you, you know, going back to you asking what my favorite performances were, I can tell you that I wasn't a really big Lizzie Borden fan. I had heard some things here and there, but I had heard you guys talk about how great he was and stuff over the years, and luckily, on the last Monsters of Rock cruise, I was able to finally see him in concert and see him perform, which I do have video of on Decibel Geek TV. And I was blown away with his performance, and it was just awesome, and all the songs were awesome. And I am now a huge fan of Lizzie Borden, and he even shared the videos on his website, which was really cool.
Nice.
So I am a huge fan of Lizzie now, and have gone back and listened to many things over the years of what he does. I've got all of his albums on my iPod, you know, so a big yay for me. I love Lizzie Borden.
Hell yeah to that. All right. Awesome. He also wants to know Paul Stanley Stool Sedation.
Stool Sedation?
I guess we're getting to the point in the night where I start to slur when you try
is
to
that
say
supposed
things
to
like
be Soul Station?
No, I think it's definitely supposed to be Stool Station. Okay. Are we looking forward to this, or will we pass?
I'm not really a big fan of scat rock, so I'm going to say I'll pass.
Ew.
Not much knowledge of Paul Stanley's Soul Station, or especially Stool Station, or whatever he's saying. But, you know, if I see something on it, I may give it a chance. But I'll say right now, I'll pass.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm not really a big jazz guy, so I'm not
it's
really
not jazz.
Not really. Yeah, it's
I was
pretty much
say,
is
that what it is? Jazz?
No, it's like Motown songs. Nah. I like Motown, no, but I'd rather listen to Motown than Paul Stanley trying to croak his way through Motown.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not interested. I mean, and I should be. I mean, I want to be. You know, I want to be excited about anything Paul Stanley's going to do, but I'm not excited about this. I'm not down with the saxophones and shit. So, yeah.
Because it's Paul Stanley doesn't mean I'm gonna be full-heartedly into it. So, yeah.
If this was a Paul Stanley hard rock and solo project, I'd be all about it.
That I'll go for. I did love the Paul Stanley solo album. I even liked the Live to Win.
That album's grown on me over time.
Yeah, it's got some pretty good songs on it, I'll say.
Yeah.
All right, Tim wants to also know, once Sinking Stanley and the Imposters actually pack it in at the end of the road, do you think the legacy of the band will be the original four and the Imposters will just be a fart in the wind?
It'll be the original four.
The legacy is always the original four.
Yeah. And I say that kind of hesitantly because I got into Kiss in the 80s when they had no makeup on and it was Bruce and Eric Carr, and I still have a deep love for that stuff and the Revenge era, the Carnival of Souls, all that. But, I mean, let's face it, to the general public, it's going to be Gene, Paul, Peter, and Ace. I mean, that's going to be the way it always is going to be.
As I think it should be. Yeah, the 80s stuff was great, you know, for what they were doing then. But that's not Kiss. Kiss was the number one band in the world in 1977, not 1987. As great as all that music is, as great as all the members that came after the original four are, you know, it's just never going to be anything but that. When you think of Kiss, you got to think of 1977, 1978 Kiss, around in there. You know, that's what's burned into the psyche of the world. You know, it's the pop icon grog. I got to have another drink. You know what I mean. It's the original four. It's always been the original four, and the original four era of Kiss will always be the best.
Yep.
I got to agree with you young whippersnappers that got into Kiss in the 80s, but I actually got into Kiss when a classmate of mine in elementary school brought the Destroyer album to school and showed it to me and said, "You got to listen to this." And we went to his house after school. We turned out all the lights, except for black lights, which is something we had in the 70s, kids.
I remember black lights, Ron.
We had them, too.
And
we had the black lights on with his black light posters and put on Destroyer. And, you know, we had the whole intro with the car crash and I was just blown away. It was like a religious experience, and I remember it to this day. To me, Kiss is always the original four. I do love, you know, that they've kept going all these years, and, you know, more power to them. And, you know, I love the stuff that they had done in the 80s and 90s and that, but to me, my heart is always with the original four. And no matter when they actually hang it up in my heart, it'll still be the original four. And, you know, no disrespect to Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer. You know, I get that they took it on and, you know, I've gotten a lot of criticism and that, but, you know, regardless, I'm still with the original four, and that's what I'm a fan of, is the Kiss of the 70s.
And that's unanimous. Grayson Galagos wants to know, "Hey, man, what be this and what be that?
And why you gotta look like that?" Don't forget that part. And I have the answer to that one, because I am cool and I am the breeze.
That is correct.
Do I get a point?
Not yet.
You haven't had a point this whole time, Ron.
Well, that is true.
At least had them. It's just taken a while to get to them.
That's true. Yeah. It's just delayed.
Point. It just, yeah, it takes me a while. Anyways, move on.
Our awesome friend David Cathy wants to know, okay, this is for all of you. Name one rocker that has left us way too soon, and what do you think they would become or not become? Would they have gotten to be one of the biggest rock stars on the planet or just another average star?
Well,
it's an interesting question with a lot of different angles to it.
Tough question.
First thing that comes to mind is Eric Carr. He's the one who left way too soon. And I don't think he would still be in Kiss. I think he would have left the band because there was a lot of tension there when he left.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say he would have wound up maybe playing for like Foreigner or a band like that. But I still think he'd be out there drumming today if he were still around.
If he was still around, do you think Kiss would have – how would the Hall of Fame have gone down if Eric Carr was still alive?
The same. Because the people that are in charge of the Hall of Fame are clueless assholes, and they would have continued to say what has to be the original band. It would have been the same treatment that Bruce Kulick got.
Oh, yeah, because of the fucking Illuminati again.
Yeah, of course.
That damn Illuminati.
All right, Ron, what do you think?
Like I said, that is a very good but tough question because you can – you know, I agree with Chris. My first and foremost thought was Eric Carr because that's the one that really strikes deep with losing way too soon. But I also agree with him that, you know, he would be a hired gun in some other band and that, so he wouldn't be a legend per se, but he would still be drumming. As far as, you know, him talking about legends, like, comes to mind, like Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, people like that, that were gone too soon. I really don't think that, you know, especially Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, and that would have went on to, you know, become legend. I think they're pretty much legends because they died so young, which I'll probably get a lot of flack for saying, but, you know, I don't know if they would have continued on into their 60s, 70s, and that they would have been what they are today because of dying young. Jimi Hendrix might have been the one that would have went on to do, you know, better things. I really wish some people would have went on to put out more music, and they were gone too soon. Of course, Randy Rhoads comes to mind. You know, he would have probably been a legend and done a lot more things. I also think about the members of Lynyrd Skynyrd, Ronnie Van Zant, and the others that died in the plane crash, because Lynyrd Skynyrd was never the same.
Yeah.
After that, and they may have put out some more great music that, you know, would have stood the test of time and would have enabled them to move on to where they're pretty much stuck in the 70s and that of what they did before the plane crash.
Yeah, you and, know they would have.
The same can be said about a lot of people. Ronnie James Dio, Janie Lane, the list goes on of what they could have contributed to putting out if they would have lived long enough. And, you know, it is a shame that a lot of them died too young.
Ron, you bring up an awesome point about, you know, like the classic bands, like the Janis Joplins, the Jimi Hendrix, the Jim Morrison. What would Jim Morrison, what kind of music would he have been creating in the 80s? You know, what would he have been doing when hard rock and metal was king? Would he have tried to do something like that, or it would have been completely different? And there's no denying that the Doors definitely did sell a lot more albums after Jim Morrison died than when he was alive. And they were damn popular when he was alive. But, you know, you always got to wonder, you know, what would they have come out with? Especially when you think of, like, Morrison, especially Jimi Hendrix. What would a Jimi Hendrix done going into, like, the 70s, into the 80s? What kind of music would he have been creating? It's almost mind-blowing to wonder what that would have been like.
That's kind of what I'm saying, that, you know, all we have is what they had put out before they died. And, you know, I don't know how the Doors or Janis Joplin or people like that, how well they would have been able to transition into, you know, the late 70s and 80s. And now with the musical climate of what they could have been able to put out, unfortunately, we'll never know whether they could have put out great stuff and been able to transition into the 80s and so forth, or whether they would have burned out and, you know, just been average and been a footnote or something. But, you know, unfortunately, we'll never know whether they could have been the biggest stars on the planet, as he put it, and or whether they would have been average and
just kind of faded away.
And would have just been going off of what they did in the late 60s and early 70s.
You know, speaking of rock legends that we lost, I mean, we just got the word today that Little Richard died.
Yeah.
That's wild, that's man.
That's a big loss, because, like, definitely, I saw one of the greatest things was, like, even Gene Simmons posted about it, and, you know, like, some people say Little Richard was the king, the real king of rock and roll, but he met Little Richard, and Little Richard corrected him. He says, no, I'm the architect of rock and roll, which I think is pretty fitting.
That's damn true, you know, and I was thinking about Little Richard, thinking, man, that guy was way ahead of it, and also right on time at the same time.
Yeah. Legendary.
Yeah, that is a shame. It's really tough nowadays that we're losing a lot of our legends. It's just time, and everybody's getting older, but you know, we're losing our legends. And Little Richard, I love Little Richard, and you know, he did a lot, and you know, pioneered the rock and roll that we know today, and it's a really shame that we did lose him, but unfortunately we're losing a lot of them.
Yeah, and like a natural resource, it kind of sucks because we're not replenishing them. We're losing a lot of rock legends, but we're not getting any new ones to take their place.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. You guys ready to move on?
Let's do it.
I was going to say, you still with us, Chris?
I'm still here.
Okay. One of our favorite people in the entire world, Courtney Cronin Dold's got a question. She wants to know.
Oh, Courtney, I love you. All right, move on.
Will lip syncing make a comeback so people don't spit on microphones from singing for real?
I told her to ask Paul Stanley.
Yeah. Well, I think lip syncing is definitely going to become more prevalent because it'll be so much harder to tell when somebody's lip syncing because they're wearing a face mask.
That's pretty well said.
All right. Nice one, Courtney.
I'm wearing a face mask right now so I don't spit on the microphone.
You know, one of the worst things I ever smelled in my entire life was one of those spit guards on a microphone at the radio station I worked at.
You aren't kidding. That's
it
like
is the worst.
Yeah, the smell of a well-used microphone is one of the grossest things in the world.
Oh, it flutters my stomach a little bit just thinking back to that time, and that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, drink some more Jaeger, Ron.
Ron just sniffed his own microphone. All right.
Hello.
All right, Keith Rockford wants to know.
Please move on.
Keith Rockford wants to know, thoughts on Saigon Kick. My belief is they didn't fit in either rock, metal, or alternative at the time and got overlooked. Killer band that got lumped in with other rock bands because of their ballad.
That's pretty spot on. I mean,
100%.
I mean, Love Is on the Way was their calling card.
I hated that song.
It was their big hit, but it really didn't reflect the rest of the band's catalog. And I mean, I think, you know, the first Saigon Kick record, and then also I love the Water record that Beeler did as the singer. There's a lot of great stuff there, but yeah, I mean, they got lumped in with the hair band thing because Love Is on the Way. I mean, whether you like it or not, it's a hair band, hair power ballad. I mean, easily.
Yeah, my good friend Jason back in the day had the CD, or they may have even been cassette back then, of The Lizard. And he's like, oh, you got to check out this band. And I'm like, yeah, I already heard that on MTV. It sucks. I don't want nothing to do with it. I heard the song. And it's like, no, you got to check it out. I was like, no, this is another one of them bands. It's not for me. It's for the ladies. And he was persistent. He's like, no, you've got to listen to the whole album. And then he played it. And I was like, holy shit. Love Is on the Way is by far the worst song on this album, and the rest of it is just killer.
Yep.
I was deceived. They didn't want me to be a fan, but I became a fan anyway.
Well, I agree with you guys that, I was not a big fan. I think power ballads really killed a lot of bands or put them in a category of where their most popular songs were these power ballads. And, they did so much more rocking music other than that.
Right.
And because of that, I was not a fan of Saigon Kick. I did not hear much of anything other than Love Is on the Way. And I hated that song. And a plug to Decibel Geek TV again, that I got to meet Jason Beeler, and he is such an awesome guy and so funny, along with Jeff Scott Soto. They did an acoustic concert here in Denver, and they were such great guys. And that was another concert that, even though it was acoustic, it blew me away. And when Jason played a lot of the Saigon Kick songs, it gave me a new appreciation, and I had to go back and listen to some of the old Saigon Kick albums, especially The Lizard. And there were some rocking tunes on that definitely didn't reflect the Love Is on the Way ballad that came out. They had some rocking tunes on that. And, so I am, again, a big fan of Saigon Kick because of that show and meeting Jason and that. So, yeah, I got to say, I love Saigon Kick, and they are definitely should not be, pigeonholed into what their popular power ballad song was, which is the case with a lot of the 80s bands.
Yeah, do not judge Saigon Kick by Love Is on the Way, just like don't judge Extreme by that song. What was their song?
More than words.
Just judge Enough's Enough on Fly High Michelle. So many of them bands fell into that trap.
Well, that was what was certainly popular, and tons of bands, like Foreigner was, their biggest hit. What the hell was it? I Want to Know What Love Is, and that. But yet, I knew Foreigner from their earlier albums, Cold as Ice and Hot Blooded and things like that. That
give me Blue Monday any day.
And, a lot of people didn't know how rocking these bands were and how good music they put out, because of the power ballad being the most popular song and what the majority of the public heard.
Yep, yep. Well, and you can also blame Foreigner for I Want to Know What Love Is for two reasons. One, because it's not that great of a ballad, and two, it's the soundtrack to the Gene Simmons sex tape, which nobody needs to see.
Oh, man, you just blew one of my Kiss round trivia questions.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Hey, because of that tape, I keep my socks on every time I have sex.
Yeah. I just love the fact that Gene Simmons got the nickname Socks because of that tape.
The influence of Gene Simmons is far-reaching.
Yeah. I'm alone when I do that, but I still have my socks.
All right.
Okay, oh, Aaron, we need to do a lightning round here, and I promise I won't ramble. But we need to get some of these awesome listener questions in.
Okay. All right, we got a few more. Let's see what else we got here. Mike Tyler wants to know, what's your favorite thrash metal bands that are not in the Big Four? Ron?
I'm out.
You don't get into thrash metal at all?
No thrash metal for Ron. Next question.
Okay. I'm going to say Overkill, Suicidal Tendencies, Testament, SOD.
Overkill, Testament. Those are mine.
Mark Alden Taylor wants to know, if there wasn't Kiss, what would be your favorite band?
Ooh.
Alice Cooper.
Black Sabbath.
I'm going to go with AC/DC. That was my second band that I saw in concert, and probably only one of the few bands that I can listen to everything on.
See, so, though, now you
I
know
love AC/DC.
Now you know the kind of people you're dealing with here. Those are all three quality ass answers right there.
Yeah.
Which Pantera album is better, Cowboys from Hell or Vulgar Display of Power? That comes from Jeff Reed.
Uh-oh.
I'd still go with Cowboys because I like the soloing on it better.
Man, I love them both. I'm going to go at this moment with Vulgar. But that can change in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, they both rule.
Ron?
Yeah, they're both awesome. Okay, fuck, I haven't heard. But my wife told me Cowboys was the better album. So I'm going to go with Cowboys.
We'll take her word for it. She knows what she's talking about. Mick Watkins wants to know, who's the real Prince of Darkness, Alice Cooper or Ozzy Osbourne?
I'd go with Alice, personally.
Personally, I got to go with Alice as well. I love Ozzy Osbourne, but I love Alice better.
I love Alice Cooper, too, but Ozzy is the Prince of fucking Darkness. Everybody knows that. And last question from Cal Hins, my good friend. I went to high school with this guy. Always liked Cal a lot. He says, Winger, Pull. Holy crap. I recently purchased this on vinyl, and while listening, was blown away by the production, songs, etc. I liked the album back in the day, but damn, almost every song is great. What are your thoughts? You guys familiar with the Winger album Pull?
Yeah, I like it. I don't rate it as highly as a lot of other fans do. I'll personally take the first two Winger's albums over Pull myself, but I do like Pull. It is a good album.
I always like that song Down Incognito. It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Good single choice for them.
But and it's been a while since I listened to Pull. It's been a long, long while. I really need it because I got the CD. I should get that one back out and give it a spin. But to me, that one was like, I don't know. Winger was tough for me because they were like the band that was for the ladies. And I always had a hard time getting into them. So it took me a long time to accept them. And it was in the Decibel Geek era when I really gave it a shot. After talking to Paul Taylor and what a cool guy he is, it was like the same thing with talking to Mike Tramp that time. You know, it made me revisit that White Lion. It did the same thing with me with Winger. And, you know, the first couple of albums are pretty good, you know, and Pull is completely different. It's the same band, I guess, but it's completely different than anything they did up to that point. And I actually prefer Pull a little bit to the earlier stuff.
I agree with both of you, with whatever you said.
We said conflicting things, but you agree with both of them.
Great answer, Ron. Oh, all man. Right. I got a good buzz on. These were a lot of good questions today.
Hey, wasn't there a question of a 50-50 thing we can do a lightning round on?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay, so Andrew Jacobs goes, and you got to be fast with your answer. Toys in the Attic or Rocks? I would go with Rocks.
Rocks, definitely.
Toys in the Attic.
All right. Dynasty or Unmasked? I would go with Dynasty.
Definitely Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Animalize or Asylum? I'd go with Asylum.
Ooh. I'm going to say Animalize.
What do we say, Animalize or Asylum? Animalize.
Okay. And these come from Andrew Jacobs, by the way.
Love you, Andrew.
Great supporter of the show.
Yeah. Always has been.
Blizzard of Oz or Diary of a Madman? I'm going to go with Blizzard.
Oh,
shit. That's tough.
Oh, that's tough. I'm going to say Diary.
Yeah, I actually have to agree with Aaron. I'm going to go with Diary. I remember seeing the Blizzard of Oz when it first came out at the record store, and I loved the cover. But I think the first Aussie album I listened to was Diary, and I loved it. And then I went back to Blizzard and went forward with the rest of what he put out and loved everything he put out. But I have to go with Diary.
All right. Holy Diver or Last in Line? I'd go with Holy Diver.
That's another tough one. Damn it.
I like them both.
I love them both, too. Holy Diver.
Well, since Last in Line was also one of them that threatened to sue me for putting videos up.
Oh, no.
I have to go with Holy Diver.
It's still Vivian Campbell, Ron.
No, seriously. Holy Diver is a classic.
Yeah.
All right.
With that.
Use Your Illusion 1 or 2. I'm going to go with Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah, those are too hard to differentiate because
how did you say that?
I'll take another drink. To me, it's all the same album.
I don't remember what was on what.
I would say
Illusion 1 and 2 both.
Yeah, I would cut down half the songs from each and make them into one album.
Exactly. It should have been one great album instead of two albums.
Yeah. They could have released the leftovers later. All right, is that it or is there more?
That's it.
Is that
all
it?
All right.
Oh,
what a crazy adventure this has been. We haven't even got to the game show yet.
We have to go into this game show now?
Yes, Ron. It's tradition. It's quarantine session tradition to do the game show. And you know what? Thanks to Loose Cannon, we've got game show music this week.
Oh, great.
So if you're ready, it is now time for Beat the Geek. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the most awesome game show in rock and roll. This is going to be something else here, I think. It's asking me to reload. Something went wrong, it said.
Oh, no. even your questions are like, fuck this.
Why does every time Aaron goes into that, I picture the end of Hot for Teacher? With David Lee Roth doing his little game show.
That's about right.
Hosting thing.
That's because that's how Aaron Camaro sees himself in his own head.
I believe it.
Oh, my God.
All right. This is going to be pretty awesome. I've got some good questions for you guys today. You guys know how it works?
Wasted for this.
Sober or not,
All right, go ahead.
This is the game show that goes to 11. It is Beat the Geek. Got 11 questions. Got Rock and Ron on one side, Chris Sinzak on the other. Chris Sinzak is the geek. You are on a losing streak, but today's your chance to redeem yourself as the geek as you face off against the reluctant Rock and Ron Runyon, who had wanted nothing to do with any of this.
If he's the geek, what am I?
We're going to figure that out. All right, are you guys ready?
Yeah.
No.
All right, Chris, you're up first. This is going to be a real test for you because I'm going to ask you some questions about some of your favorite artists. And your very first question is this. Alice Cooper's real name is Vincent Damon Furnier. Is it Furnier? Furnier? How do you say
Fernier.
It, Chris?
Furnier.
Furnier. Vincent Damon Furnier. The name Vincent comes from an uncle on his father's side. Who is he named after in regards to his middle name, Damon? Rock and Ron, do you think Chris knows who Alice Cooper is named after?
Oh, this is Chris's question. Okay. Does he know it?
Does he know it?
No, he doesn't know it.
All right, Chris, he's betting against you. Your choices are, was he named after Mayor Damon Draper? Was he named after singer Damon Wayne, writer Damon Runyon, or chaplain Damon O'Neill?
I will say the chaplain was the correct answer.
That is incorrect. And Rock and Ron show this. He was named after writer Damon Runyon. Any relation?
Ooh, that's my grandfather. Oh, I don't know if he is, but he's my grandfather. Named Runyon is some relation to me.
Well, since you knew that and he is your grandfather, which you should know that, and you bet against Chris and Chris got it wrong, that's 1 point for Rock and Ron.
And I'm really going to lose to a guy that's been doing Jaeger bombs all night long.
We shall see.
Oh,
because
shit,
now
I actually got a point by default or...
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I like this game now.
All right, well, let's see how it goes because it's your question. Oh, Rock and Ron, since 1969 is the only constant member of Uriah Heep? Chris, does Ron know his Uriah Heep?
I'm going to say he knows it.
All right, Ron, he's not betting against you. Your choices are guitarist Mick Box, drummer Roger Pendleton, drummer Nigel Olsen, or bassist Cram Jansen?
All right, let me first say, are you fucking serious, Camaro?
Yeah, that's the question.
Let's you know, re-answer, re-question.
Re-question?
The question. What was it? Something about Uriah Heep.
Okay,
go ahead.
Who, since 1969, is the only constant member of Uriah Heep? So Uriah Heep's been around since the late 60s. They've had a whole lot of different members come through the band. Only one guy has been there all along. Your choices are guitarist Mick Box, drummer Roger Pendleton, drummer Nigel Olsen, or bassist Cram Jansen?
And Chris actually said I know this.
He's not betting against you.
Well, I actually do know that Nigel Olsen, I recognize that name. He was the drummer for Elton John.
You're actually going to go long-winded on a multiple choice question. Holy shit.
Just pick one, Ron.
Can I call a friend?
No. You can call Chris Bodley.
I want to call Chris and Zach.
Doesn't work that way. I'll give you the wrong answer.
Chris will be like, oh, hang on a second. My phone's ringing. It's Ron.
All right. What was the answers again? Or the
okay. Choices. Once again, your choices are guitarist Mick Box, drummer Roger Penlington, drummer Nigel Olsen, or bassist Cram Jansen.
So we had two drummers in there. What was the first one?
This could be an epic, long episode of the Beat God. The Geek. The first right, one was right. guitarist gonna, Mick I'm gonna, Box.
I'm going to try. What do we say?
Guitarist Mick Box.
All right, I'm going with Mick Box.
God damn it.
That is correct.
God damn it, what? That is correct.
All right, did so Rock and Ron gets a point that, for Chris? Getting it correct.
I
but
did actually know that, damn it.
Chris did not bet against you. You didn't need to call him because you guessed right.
Do I get a point?
So yes. That's a point for you. That puts Ron up 2-0 on Chris.
2-0.
All right, Chris, time for your question. Almost every member of the Ramones were born in the New York, New Jersey area. But which original member was born in Hungary? Ron, you know Chris is a big fan of the Ramones, but does he know the answer to this question?
This is rigged. You asking Ramones questions. So what was the question again?
Oh, my God.
Which member of the Ramones was born in Hungary? Do you think he knows it?
I'm going to say no.
All right, Chris, he's betting against you. Which member of the Ramones was born in Hungary? Was it Joey, Dee Dee, Tommy, or Johnny?
It was Dee Dee.
That is incorrect.
Oh, yeah.
It was Tommy that was really? Born in Hungary. Johnny was actually born in Virginia. The other two were born in New York, New Jersey.
I swear I thought Dee Dee grew up in like Germany or Hungary. That's fucked up.
Yep, you got them mixed up.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, shut up, Ron.
Too bad for you there, geek.
Oh, you're going to get out talking on me now.
All right, Ron did not bet against you, so no points awarded.
I did bet against
him. Oh, you did bet against him.
I did.
No, he did. Well, yeah, I guess actually he did.
He did.
Yeah, I did.
That's right. So Ron gets a point.
That
makes it 3-0. Rockin' Ron, who didn't even want to play this game.
I'm going to lose again to Rockin' Ron.
All right, Ron, you ready for your next question?
Oh.
No.
Well, too bad.
Can we just stop now?
No.
I'm ahead.
No. You're up by 3 points.
Stop while
you're doing
I'm
good.
Ahead.
All right, your question is this. Joseph Michael Poole is better known by this stage name. Chris, does Rock and Ron know who Joseph Michael Poole is?
Well, I got to catch up, so I'll say no.
All right, he is betting against you, Ron. Your choices are Oz Fox, Buckethead, Wednesday 13, or Davy Vane.
So who was it, Joseph Michael Levitt?
Joseph Michael Poole.
Joseph Michael Poole.
Is that Oz Fox, Buckethead, Wednesday 13, or Davy Vane?
Did Chris bet against me?
Yes.
Yes, he did.
What's the list again?
Oz Fox, Buckethead, Wednesday 13, or Davy Vane?
Gene Simmons.
Don't confuse him.
I'm sorry.
Joseph Poodle is... Stop it. Stop it.
Okay.
Just say A, B, C, or D, please.
All right. You said Buckethead, Wednesday.
Wednesday 13, Davey Vane, Buckethead, all right, Roz
Wednesday,
Fox.
Wednesday 13.
That is correct.
My God.
And since Chris bet against you, that's 2 points.
That's 2 points.
Oh, man.
You that still brings think it's the rigged, score Ron?
To 6-0.
Six?
Yeah, you still think it's rigged?
Yes.
Fuck you. But...
Oh, man. Oh, shit. This is great. All right, Chris, time for your next question.
Oh, who cares anymore?
Bring them on. I'm on a roll.
If you're still listening, you're incredibly drunk.
I'm still listening.
Cheers to you.
And I'm incredibly drunk.
Cheers to all you guys.
Let's go.
All right, Chris, your question. On the credits for Wild America, Tora Tora thanks all of the following bands except... Ron, you know Chris is a big fan of Tora Tora. Does he know the answer to this question?
Please bet against me so I have a shot.
So they thanked all of the bands except this one.
There's 4 bands. 3 of them were thanked. 1 was not.
3 of them were thanked and 1 was not.
Does Chris know it?
I'm going to bet against him just for the hell of it.
All right. Ron's betting against you, Chris. Your choices are Kix, Ty Kettle, Poison, and Dangerous Toys.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and you acted like you knew it.
I don't know it. I'm just trying to get points where I can to beat your drunk ass. I don't think they did any dates opening for Poison, so I'm going to say Poison.
That is correct. Poison is the band that did not get thanked in the credits for Wild America. So Chris gets a point.
I told you it was rigged.
And Rock and Ron bet against him, so Chris gets another point.
Oh!
2-6.
Yeah.
That is not right.
I'm totally killing it. It's so rigged.
All right. Well, we got a little ways to go, and you can easily still turn this around because we haven't even hit the Kiss round yet. So the next question goes to Rock and Ron. Ron, are you ready?
Yeah, I guess so.
Simple and sweet. What color are Ozzy's eyes?
What cover?
What?
What cover has Ozzy's eyes on it?
Oh, my God.
Let me repeat the question.
Did I lose you, Aaron? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You lost all of us.
Ron.
Yes, go ahead.
What color are Ozzy Osbourne's eyes? Chris, does Ron know what color Ozzy's eyes are?
I have to bet against him every time now, so no.
All right, Ron. Well, Chris is betting against you. Your choices are blue, green, brown, or gray.
I thought they were black.
As his soul. Glowing red.
The Prince of Darkness. They should be black. What'd you say again?
Blue, green, brown, or gray?
Is gray even a color of eyes? Blue, green, brown, gray. I don't know. Green.
That is correct.
Oh, no shit. Green?
And
green.
And since Chris bet against you, that's two more points.
All right, I'm hanging up.
Did he bet against me?
I did, motherfucker.
Then I get 2 points.
That brings the score to 8-2.
Now 20?
8-2.
Okay.
That's a pretty damn good score. We're not even at the kiss round yet. We got one more question before we get to it. And it is Chris's question.
Kiss round right now.
Chris, you ready?
Why not?
According to iTunes, this is Motley Crue's most popular song. Rock and Ron, you think he knows the answer?
Hell no.
So cocky.
Oh, man.
All right, I want Chris, double the points, whatever that is. So, no. He doesn't know it.
You don't get double the points. I do if I get it right.
Do I get... No. Oh, I don't get double the points?
No, you get a point if he gets it wrong.
Do I get a point, though?
Yeah, you get a point if he gets it wrong, if you're betting against him.
All right, getting it wrong. Go ahead.
All right, Chris. He is excitedly, enthusiastically betting against you. Your choices are Kickstart My Heart, Home Sweet Home, Dr. Feelgood, or Saints of Los Angeles.
Before I answer, I just want to say, this whole week, Ron was saying, oh, I'll be the person who never gets one thing right and beat the geek, and Chris is going to kill me.
He hasn't gotten one wrong yet.
I know.
My goal was to be the only guest to get 0 points on this, and I got like
8.
A couple hundred or something right now. So I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Well, it's not
over
yet.
Answer the fucking question.
Wow.
What was the question?
All right. I know you're excited, but I have gotten through junior high.
Oh, man.
I love hearing Aaron laugh.
I know.
Well, you're doing a good job of bringing it out of me tonight.
I'll go with Kickstart My Heart.
That is correct.
Oh, bullshit.
Kickstart My Heart's the number one most popular Motley Crue song. Home Sweet Home is number 2. Dr. Feelgood at number 4. And believe it or not, Saints of Los Angeles is number 7.
I totally believe that.
I was surprised at that. Top 10.
Where's
All right, Rock and Ron bet against you, and you got it right, so that's 2 points. You're halfway there. The score is 4-8. And you know how things can quickly turn around in the kiss round. And the kiss round is now Rock and Ron. Are you ready for your kiss round question? Double the points.
Wait a minute. He got 2 points for that?
Yeah, because he got it right and you bet against him.
Oh. I need to rethink this stuff. All right.
You better think about it now because.
What are we doing? The kiss round now?
It's the kiss round.
All right.
And it's your question.
My question? Okay.
Here it comes.
All right.
Kiss's highest peak on the German album charts is number 4. They did it twice. Which 2 albums? Chris, does Rock and Ron know which are the 2 most popular albums of Kiss in Germany?
No.
All right, Ron. Chris is betting against you. Your choices are...
fuck you, Chris.
Well, fuck you, too.
I know the German charts like the back of my hand.
Because you're into all that scat porn.
Oh, fuck.
All right.
All right.
Your choices are... Be professional now.
Well, this all is right. Yeah, you make it tough to be a professional game show host, too.
Songs.
Okay. Your choices are Destroyer and Revenge, Unmasked.
Do the question again.
Okay, all right. Kiss's highest peak on the German album charts is number 4. They did it twice. Which 2 albums? 2 albums went to number 4 in Germany. That's the highest Kiss has ever peaked. The 2 albums, were they Destroyer and Revenge, Unmasked and Sonic Boom, Animalize and Asylum, or Love Gun and Lick It Up?
Did Chris bet against me?
Yes.
That was probably a good move.
Stakes are high in the Kiss round.
The highest points on German charts, number four.
Basically, the two most popular Kiss albums in Germany.
Two most popular albums.
Destroyer and Revenge.
Germany is probably behind on stuff. So what one was the latest album?
The latest album out of you got Destroyer and Revenge, Unmasked and Sonic Boom, Animal Eyes and Asylum, Love Gun and Lick It Up.
What was the...
You drunk fuckers are messing up my Sonic game show. Boom?
I'm going to go with Sonic Boom.
Holy shit. That is correct. The two most popular Kiss albums in Germany are Unmasked and Sonic Boom.
Unmasked?
So you got it correct, and Chris Unmasked bet against you. That's Sonic 2 Boom? Points. That brings the score 11-4.
Well, 11.
So he wins.
Yeah. I went to 11.
No, we still got no because it's points. It's not you don't get a point for each. You're messing up. The game is not over yet.
Okay, yeah, it is. But okay,
I mean, you still got a chance. You got a Kiss round question. That's double the points.
I still want to stop now.
This is a good one too. I'm proud of
this
one.
Did I get double points?
You did. Whatever. Oh shit! That's right. So actually. Ron has got 2 extra points because of that. See, I'm screwed. You guys, oh, man, you got me drinking too much.
Yeah, it's our fault.
So the score is actually...
Get it together
13
there,
13-4. Get the points. Because of double points and betting against. Yeah, 13-4. Wow.
13?
I'm proud of these Kiss questions. Chris, here comes yours.
That's my lucky number. Let's stop now.
Gene Simmons' 1978 solo album charted the highest of any member of Kiss in the United States. Which one had the highest charting solo album in Japan? Ron, it's the Kiss round. Double the points. You want to bet against them?
Well, what was the question again?
Just say yes, you'll bet against me.
Okay, yes, I'll bet against you.
Well, Chris sounds confident. Ron has been talked into betting against him. Chris, you know the choices. Gene, Paul, Peter, or Ace? Who charted the highest in Japan?
I'll say Ace.
That is incorrect.
Yes.
Ron gets 2 points because of the Kiss round and betting against you. You got it wrong. In Japan, Peter, Chris... reached 40 on the charts. Ace Frehley reached 30. Gene Simmons reached 24. And Paul Stanley reached 18.
Wow.
The answer is Paul Stanley. Those are good Kiss questions.
I almost thought you was going to say Paul or Peter had the highest ranking. That would be something.
Nope. In every reality and in every country, in every age and in every time, Peter Chris always comes in last.
That is true.
Yeah, nobody wants to be Peter Chris, not even Peter Chris.
Sorry, Peter. Love you.
All right, so with that mistake in the Kiss round, that brings the score. Rock and Ron, 15. Chris Sinzak, 4. 15. That's the highest score so far in this game. We've still got 2 more questions to go. Ron, it's your turn.
Wait a minute. What do I got? 15?
15.
Yes. Oh, shit.
It's a new record.
You move on.
All right. Well, you know how this goes. I always like to ask favorite question or your favorite band. 2 weeks ago, I asked Baco about 7 Mary 3. Everybody knows that's his favorite band. Last week, I asked Loose Cannon about Pat Benatar. We all know how loose cannon lusts after Pat Benatar after all these years. So, Rock and Rod, your question is this. Wildside, then known as Young Guns, were the prize in a bidding war between record companies in 1990. Who ultimately signed them? Chris, you know how Rock and Ron feels about Wildside. Does he know the answer to this question?
All right, now I'm thinking this is rigged to Ron.
no, because I asked Loose Cannon about Pat Benatar last week, and I asked
Baco about Seven Mary Three. And I actually knew the answer to that one, let me just say.
I'll say he knows this.
All right, he's not betting against you. Rock and Ron, your choices are Capitol, PolyGram, Elektra, or Warner Brothers.
What was Wildside signed to?
In 1990, when they got their big record deal, all these companies were fighting over them. One of them won out. Was it Capitol, PolyGram, Elektra, or Warner Brothers?
I do actually think it was Capitol.
Holy shit, Ron, that is correct.
Holy shit. Of course it was.
So Chris did not bet against you, and you get a point. So the score is now 16-4. And just for the fun of it, Chris, I've been asking you all kinds of questions about your favorite bands today. I got one more for you. In the 70s, Thin Lizzy's Phil Lynott released two written volumes of poetry that were combined into a book. What was the name of that book? Ron, you know he loves the Thin Lizzy, but does he know
he does.
The Phil Lynott poetry? Do you want to bet against him? What the
hell? Why are you asking Chris Ramones and Thin Lizzy questions?
Because I think it's fun to ask Chris questions about his favorite bands and then stump him on them, all right?
Yeah, because I'm clearly doing so awesome tonight.
Because he's been getting them all wrong, because he's got 4 points all along here. Well, what do you think, Ron? You want to pad your points? You want to bet against him one last time?
I don't remember the question or anything, but I'll bet against him.
All right, Chris, in this final question in this week's Beat the Geek, do you know the name of the Phil Lynott poetry book? Was it Words to Remember Me By, Songs for While I'm Away, Poems for the Wandering Soul, or Things We Thought Were Forever? What was the title of the poetry book by Phil Lynott?
Before I answer, let me just say, I've never had more fun losing in a game of trivia. I'll say Songs for While I'm Away.
That is correct. And Ron bet against you, so that's 2 points. The final score of this week's edition of Beat the Geek, Rockin' Ron, who didn't even want to play this game, defeats Chris Sinzak. Final score, 16-6. All right, Chris. Well, this has been a pretty interesting edition of Beat the Geek. Rockin' Ron, how do you feel?
Oh, did I win?
You won. You got the highest score of all time.
I beat the geek?
You didn't just beat him. You trounced him.
I trounced him. What was it? 16-6. Six.
Yeah, you won't remember anyway.
Chris, how do you feel after something like that?
I'm drunk too, so it doesn't really make much difference to me.
But it should make a difference. I asked you questions about all your favorite bands.
I got the Thin Lizzy one right, at least. But like anything. And anyone who's coming on in future editions of Beat the Geek, just know, if Aaron hits me with chart positions, I'm probably going to lose.
But I didn't hit you with any chart positions today.
Well, you should have hit him with chart positions.
Well, I don't think it really mattered. I mean, look at the end
score. He wouldn't
have
got 6 points.
Damn! You already beat me, now you're going to rub it in?
Oh, man.
I actually beat the geek.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, let me tell you something. You're always the jokester and the prankster, always tricking people into fooling them and making them feel bad. Well, today I got to tell you, me and Rock and Ron, we conspired against you and we cheated. So this one's not going to count against you, but I got to tell you this. I'm super proud of you for getting these six fucking points, because my goal here was to give Ron a perfect score and you a perfect score in the opposite direction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were just fucking with you.
Wow. Well, I mean,
there ain't no way Ron would have known any of those questions.
I'm not always
Aaron's idea.
But I mean, do I always come off like I'm trying to like trick people? I hope I don't come off that way.
This goes back to your April Fool's days, my friend.
What? The Vinnie Vincent fake interview?
The people have been waiting for somebody to get revenge on you for that for years, and now it's finally happened.
Oh, okay. Well, you got me.
And I am extremely happy that I'm the one to get revenge on you, Chris.
Oh,
because,
man.
Truth be told, I would not know any of those questions if it wasn't for Aaron.
Not even the one about Wildside.
So even the one about Wildside.
Wait a minute. So he had the answers the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You guys both suck.
Oh, man. Too fun.
But the goal was to get you 0 points, and you actually did know a couple
of
them.
Yeah. I mean, these
so
6 points.
I got to give it to you on that, Chris, that you actually guessed correctly on a couple of them.
Because that's what I told Ron. I said, if you think your questions are tough and you've got the answers to them, wait till you see what I got lined up for Chris. He's not going to get any of these right. And you ended up with 6 points. So that's pretty damn impressive.
You hit me with a fucking Phil Lynott poetry. Fuck you, man.
I didn't think you'd know it.
I didn't either, but once you said the name, I was like, I think I remember hearing about that. So, yeah, thank God I read some biographies, right?
Nice.
Hey, he asked me an Uriah Heep question.
Yeah, and I knew the answer to that one.
Well, what did you think about those Kiss questions, though, huh? Who the hell would ever thought Unmasked and Sonic Boom were the two most successful German Kiss albums?
For some reason, when you read off the answers, I was like, I bet it's those.
Because it seems so the weird. Most unlikely.
Yeah.
Oh, but it is.
Sure you did, Chris.
No, because Europe is always like far behind the U.S. and stuff like that. So it's like, of course, it'll be like two of the least popular albums among the fan base.
Not anymore. Now we're the ones that are behind.
Oh, wow.
And what about the Gene Simmons question, or the what about the Kiss question about Japan? That was a good one, too. I had no idea.
No, I mean, I thought Ace was like kind of the most beloved character, but yeah. So I'm glad to hear that Ron won under false pretense.
it was the only way he was going to win.
To cheat, but
so we're going to put an asterisk by my.
Yeah,
record.
No, this was just an exhibition. This one doesn't count against you.
Okay.
Yes, you are still the reigning champion.
That works for me.
Well, not technically, but you are still the geek to be beaten. So I guess we're probably going to continue this next week because we're not quite out of quarantine yet. But you know what?
I did play it off good, didn't I, Aaron?
What's that?
Did I play it off good?
Yeah, dude, you did awesome. Way better. Rock and Ron Wasted is way better than Ian Wasted. So at least we can count on Rock and Ron to nail it in the first take. The deception.
Oh my God.
But yeah, that's your April Fool's joke all these years in the waiting to be revenged.
Well, why do you gotta play it on me, Aaron? You were part of the April Fool's joke to start with.
Yeah, kinda. Not really. I didn't write anybody's script.
Oh, you helped me hatch the whole thing.
But I did write Ron's. Sorta.
Aaron is not as innocent as he's saying.
Oh, what? No, I'm just an innocent game show host. I don't know nothing about nothing.
Okay.
This has been fun. I want to thank everybody for bringing their awesome questions once again. Ron, your idea to be able to hang out and drink with your buddies without getting coronavirus was pure genius.
I loved it, guys. This was a great time. I loved getting revenge on Chris, and you know, it was a great time. I'm sorry that it took 4 years and 200 plus episodes for you guys to get me on.
But well, he's a busy guy.
It. Thank you.
Well, look at it this way, Ron. It took about that long to record this episode.
So. And with that being said, I think we're going to wrap up today's show and let you guys listen to it for yourselves. I doubt these guys are signed by Sony or anybody else. So for you, here's Paw with Jesse, and we'll see you next week.
A boy and his dog. Let's hear it.
Don't fall.